et nous le montrons dans nos actes. Mais nous entendons que soit respectée notre identité, nos mœurs, nos coutumes, notre patrimoine national.
France has a long history of flirting with the far right. In April 2022, Marine Le Pen, leader of the far-right National Rally Party, was President Emmanuel Macron's closest challenger in the presidential election, gaining more than 40% of the vote.
Je n'abandonnerai les Français. Vive la République, vive la France!
And although she didn't win, racist and Islamophobic ideas promoted by far-right parties now reverberate across French society. Previously on The Big Picture, we showed how French society has been shaped by its colonial past.
Compte qu'il y a énormément de violences qui ont existé pendant la colonisation et qui existent encore aujourd'hui.
I'm Miriam Francois, and in this episode, we'll take a close look at what lies behind the far-right's appeal and the impact on the people in its firing line.
What is the moment in which someone presses the red button and says, this is an existential threat to the very basis of this country?
This is important to talk about how the young people are facing racism and stigmatization by far-right extremism.
Marine Le Pen has managed to just present herself as someone who is familiar to the working class, which she's not. And her interest is not the interest of the poorest people in France.
We're being shocked at the rise of the far right, but actually we're not tackling the roots that lead to the rise of the far right, which are within the mainstream elite, whether it is the media elite, the political elite, and to some extent the academic elite as well.
Today, the far right are helping shape political and media debates, and arguably some of the policies of the Macron government. National symbols like Joan of Arc or Marianne, the icon of the French Republic, are being appropriated by the far right. And meanwhile, conspiracy theories like the Great Replacement, the idea that Muslims and immigrants will soon outnumber white people in France, have moved from the fringes to the mouths of mainstream politicians. They may not have won at the ballot box, but the ideas of the far right, as well as the failure of traditional parties to offer a compelling alternative, are challenging the fundamentals of our democracy.
One of those fundamentals is civic participation. The far right is rising, but French people are voting in ever fewer numbers. And a dangerous gap is opening up between many of France's young people and those elected to lead them. Christophe Britaud is a rapper whose music reflects the disaffection felt by a growing section of French youth.
J'ai passé plus de 100 000 à faire les 100 pas.
Pourquoi tu ne votes pas?
Parce que je me sens pas représenté par le panel de candidats à chaque fois présentés. Pour eux, ils sont plus là pour leur pouvoir et leur carrière que le bien-être de comment on va dire.
Donc tu sens pas le pouvoir du vote. T'as pas l'impression que ton vote peut avoir un impact?
Non, pas du tout.
Aujourd'hui, bon, tu fais peut-être partie de la tranche qui est visée par l'extrême droite. Tu es plutôt dans la jeunesse. Tu ne te reconnais pas dans le paysage politique, on va dire, traditionnel. Est-ce que tu as été tentée, toi, par le discours de l'extrême droite?
Non, pas du tout. Ce qui fait l'extrême droite, c'est plus la migration que l'économie ou le social dans un pays. Donc, moi, personnellement, je considère que c'est pas du tout un problème dans un pays. Au contraire, c'est une richesse. Et donc forcément, les idées d'extrême droite, c'est pas ce que je suis représenté. Mais maintenant, je suis en capacité, on va dire, de comprendre pourquoi les gens, ils en viennent à voter ça, malgré que je ne sois pas d'accord avec, en fait.
C'est quoi la raison pourquoi ils votent pour l'extrême droite, selon toi ?
Des gens, on va dire, que je connais, parce qu'ils ont essayé la gauche, ils ont essayé la droite, l'extrême droite, ça n'avait jamais été au pouvoir.
A short while later, Christophe's friends, fellow rapper Riyad, and his manager Aladdin join us to share their thoughts.
Qui c'est qui a voté pendant les dernières élections présidentielles?
Moi aussi, j'ai voté. Ouais.
D'accord, donc deux sur trois.
Ouais, c'est ça.
Et vous avez voté par conviction ou par opposition?
Par un peu des deux. Moi aussi un peu des deux, je me suis intéressé par rapport au programme de celui-là qui m'a dérangé le plus, celui-là qui était le plus adéquat avec ma vie à moi. Et puis au final, j'ai trouvé celui-là qui m'a rangé et malheureusement il n'est pas passé. Au deuxième tour, j'ai voté blanc parce que c'était pas ce que je voulais.
Au deuxième tour, j'ai voté blanc exactement parce que moi aussi, ça me convenait pas.
Après, voilà, pour le côté politique, on s'intéresse pas vraiment trop vers où on est, mais sinon, il le faut un minimum, tu vois. Ouais.
Mais il y a un problème de racisme au quotidien en France, ou d'islamophobie, est-ce que c'est quelque chose que vous vivez, que vous voyez ?
Pour ma mère, qui elle a le voile, oui, ça doit se ressentir au quotidien, mais elle va pas me raconter tous les quiproquos qu'elle a dehors. Elle aussi, elle a appris à passer au-dessus, et voilà. Dans l'extrême droite, ils pensent que la France elle doit appartenir seulement aux Français, mais en soi, la France, c'est nous, c'est tout le monde.
Pour s'en servir, etc. Donc c'est aussi pour ça qu'on préfère combattre les choses à notre manière, peut-être justement avec la musique, et de bâtir notre propre monde au final, et notre propre sphère, en fait, se débrouiller entre nous pour...
Christophe and his friends express a really common sense of disaffection with the political process. And their response to that is a real go-get-it attitude of create your own music studio, make your own music, ultimately try and succeed on your own terms. But not everyone has such a positive attitude. Some young people are now being targeted by the far right and make up a growing and new portion of their support base.
Safia, you're the vice president of SOS Racisme, which is a movement of anti-racist NGOs, but you're also a student. And we know that campuses have been the site of tensions between far-right activists and anti-racist students. How is the rise of the far-right in France affecting French campuses?
Yes, what we're noticing is that the atmosphere in the political French life and the media French life are impacting our campus, universities and college. In the center of Paris, the far-right activists are trying to conquer, for example, the Latin Quarter, in which there is the famous Sorbonne universities, for example. And in that context, anti-racist activists, anti-fascist activists are facing threats.
I can tell that there is a change in the campus's mood, because when I was a student, there was only one far-right union in campuses. But now, to see how common it is for students to be part of a far-right union or far-right group tells a lot about how the far-right ideology has been trivialized in the French mentality.
This is very much the kind of crux of the issue, right? We tend to think of the far-right as exceptional. You know, we talk about the rise of the far-right as if it was happening on its own. And in fact, this has never been this way. You know, it wasn't this way in the 1930s, and it's not this way today. And what we see is that the far right rises when it's allowed to rise, when it's given platforms on the media, when it's given platforms on the ideas of mainstream politicians. When people in the Macron government talk about wokeism in a way that is incredibly reactionary, when people target communities such as the Muslim communities in France, and by extension, any racialized communities. We're being shocked at the rise of the far right, but actually we're not tackling the roots that lead to the rise of the far right, which are very much within the mainstream, which are within the mainstream elite, whether it is the media elite, the political elite, and to some extent the academic elite as well. We tend to think of the rise of the far right originating from the so-called white working class. This has been disproven a very long time ago. But yet we've had these narratives, these kind of fantasies that we've created, that it's like people at the bottom who are angry and they just want something radically different.
It's the fact that the mainstream parties have been trying to seduce the far-right voters for a while. So instead of focusing on social injustices, they understood that there was a way to gather more votes on focusing on those people who were sensitive to racism, to sexism. And the other thing is that historically, the left was very colonialist in the history of France. It's something that is still, that you can still hear in the rhetoric of the left in France, for example, when it comes to Islamophobia and to trying to ban the signs of Islam, especially the headscarf of Muslim women. It would be presented or displayed by feminists as something to emancipate Muslim women. So to protect, to help people, to support them, you would try to assimilate them. And I think that we need also to understand that racism doesn't equate far right. It's something that is very well spread on the whole French political landscape.
So can we talk about one of the far right theories that made it very mainstream, the so-called great replacement, right? That this racist theory that somehow white French people are going to be culturally and demographically replaced by non-white people, particularly Muslims. Now, we know there are many studies that have showed that, you know, this is not going to happen, certainly for a very long time. And yet 67% of French people say they are worried about a great replacement. How did that happen?
We need to be careful with opinion polls, of course, because they don't give us the opinion of the public unadulterated, right? It's a mediated public opinion. And the problem is the media is incredibly slanted on certain issues in France. And that goes back to what Rokaya was saying about history. In France, there has been a refusal to engage with the darkest corners of French history and to actually confront them the way other countries have tried, not very successfully, but a little bit more than France at least, and in particularly colonization. France has completely refused to engage with colonization. It serves their interest to pretend that there is no racism in France.
It's a very dangerous and racist theory that say that populations are purposely coming from Africa to replace and to conquer Europe and to replace its original population. What is dangerous is the fact that it's gone totally mainstream. It's very important to understand how far that theory can go and how it can lead some people to terrorism. Yes, of course, the French population is changing, but mistaking replacement by change is not understanding the French history. If the French population is now so diverse, it's because France was a colonial power. People didn't come to France by chance. It's the consequence of the colonial history of France, and it's how we are today and what we have to do to deal with today.
What it is interesting with the great replacement concept is the level of violence that we can notice on the ground and especially on universities. For example, at the center of Paris, at Montpellier, at Aix-en-Provence, at Lyon. This is cities where there is prestigious universities in which anti-racist and anti-fascist activists were threatened with iron bar by far-right activists. And moreover, we talk about this atmosphere, about the Great Replacement, but there is also another atmosphere which is created by the Macron government. And as a student, I am sad to notice that the government are not fighting enough for us to fight against this atmosphere.
If I can just jump on this, CNews during the campaign invited Renaud Camus on their platform, right?
So the founder of the concept of the Great Replacement.
Well, the person who actually tagged the name. And the interview is honestly mind-blowing. By any journalistic standards, it's absolutely appalling. It's a friendly interview. He's not really questioned. He's encouraged to kind of really talk about what he means by the great replacement. I think we really need to be better at making the connection between this kind of mainstream, sophisticated legitimization of racism and the actions on the ground of emboldened far-right actors.
And I want to talk about that. So CNews, for people who aren't familiar with it, you know, we could call it maybe the French Fox News. It's the channel that really propelled one of the main candidates, at least who was given a lot of airtime. So that was Éric Zemmour. And I want to talk about Éric Zemmour right now because, of course, during the campaign itself, he received a huge amount of airtime. And then when it came to the actual results, he only received 7% of the vote. He didn't even manage to get a seat as an MP, right, in the legislative election. So has the media been amplifying
rather than merely reflecting the rise of the far right? What's the role of these television stations, of these debates, in, you know, the growing popularity of this movement?
Eric Zemmour is a creation of the media. Like, if it wasn't for the media, it wouldn't exist. It was first pushed by the public service. We have to say that he was, weekly on public service. Even after being convicted for authoring racist statements, he remained on the public service every week, sharing his very reactionary ideas. And the fact that he was so visible during the campaign made Marine Le Pen, the head of the National Rally, the leading far right party, it made her seem very reasonable, because Eric Zemmour was so extreme, so explicitly racist and sexist in a way that was not really usual in the French politics. So I think that he lost, but at some point it was a win for Marine Le Pen, because she could even challenge what Eric Zemmour was saying. So when he was saying that we should ban everything Muslim from France, she was saying, no, as long as Muslims respect France, we're okay. And at some point you would even think that, oh yes, she's nice, because she, but it was just hiding her white supremacist agenda, and having someone so extreme was really helpful for the far right.
Right. So I'm just wondering, in light of the fact that we know polls were showing that actually people's primary concerns were actually around things like the cost of living crisis, why is there a disconnect, do you think, between what we know people are saying and their real concerns, and then what gets discussed in the media?
I mean, I think there's, like, as you've said, I mean, I think there's been this cynicism as well, and this kind of use of the far right as a diversion, you know, filling the space and like hiding particular political projects. But this is not new. This is 40 years old. You know, this started under François Mitterrand, who was socialist president in the early 1980s. He was struggling because of austerity, and he tried to divide the far right by changing the electoral system to proportional, you know. And this has been followed then by various other politicians who have realized that actually, yeah, the far right is a useful idiot, or looked like a useful idiot. And you could kind of, instead of making people think about what they really care about, such as economic issues, as you were saying, make them think about immigration, make them think, you know, about Islam, make them think about other things. And that's worked so incredibly well. And it's such a failure of democracy, in a way, of all the kind of things that should protect a democracy, like a strong, diverse media, strong, diverse voices in politics, people working for everyone, not just, you know, particular interests and things like that. But the results of the legislative election, the results of the presidential election with Marine Le Pen on the rise, is not something we haven't seen coming. I remember when I was demonstrating in 2002, when Jean-Marie Le Pen got to the second round of the presidential election, and I was demonstrating with fellow students, and, you know, we felt that we had to go and vote for Jacques Chirac, the center-right candidate at the time, even though we disagreed. And, you know, he ended up being elected with 82% of the vote, and then ended up mainstreaming more far-right politics for 5 years. And then it led to Nicolas Sarkozy, who mainstreamed more far-right politics, which led to then François Hollande, who was supposedly on the left, but then mainstreamed more far-right politics. And then, of course, Emmanuel Macron. And that cynicism, I think, is incredibly dangerous. And I think, it's shameful, really.
And I want to pick up on this. I want to ask you about parallels between the present moment and the 1930s, with the surge in support of the far right sort of being compared to the rise of fascism. Is that what we're seeing right now, or is this something completely different? Because it doesn't seem to be getting the response you might expect if it is a surge in fascism.
Like, what we can say for sure is that the National Rally has been founded by neo-Nazis and nostalgists from fascism. And Marine Le Pen is still supported by very violent and radical fascist groups. That's something that is a fact, and that is not really commented as such by the media. And what I can tell is that the coverage of the rise of the far right is not really understood as a danger. It's like it's more and more seen as a very common party that shouldn't be tackled as extreme. And what we hear the most is the extremes saying the extreme right and the extreme left, as if both of them equated. So you have on one hand, one party which is trying to dismantle all the human rights that have been the basis of the Republic, and on the other hand, a party who is trying to bring more social justice on every challenge, which is climate change, sexism, racism, and any other kind of exclusion. So Marine Le Pen has managed to just present herself as someone who is familiar to the working class, which is she is not. She's been very rich for, you know, from the beginning, and her interest is not the interest of the poorest people in France.
History never repeats itself, right? So I don't think we will get the same as what happened in the 1930s. I don't think we need the swastikas or jackboots, really, to have fascism coming into the mainstream of politics. But I think there are lessons that we really haven't learned. The simple historical fact is that in the 1930s, when the Nazis rose to power, the first thing is they never won elections with a massive support, right? And in fact, when Hitler gets to power, the support is waning. Right. If Hitler gets to power again, it's because he's used as a useful idiot by the center to prevent the rise of the left. You know, and what we are not learning is that the far right doesn't get to power on its own. Mm. People are fed up with the system. The Front National, the Rassemblement National, Éric Zemmour, they're a symptom of that systemic failure, but they're only a symptom. And they're a fairly small symptom, in fact, when you think about it, compared to actually the people who abstain, the Gilets jaunes, who have been completely forgotten. People are trying to express more progressive, more optimistic ways to change the system, but they're not listened to. And instead, the far right is given the platform, and the far right is posited as the only alternative to a system that doesn't work anymore.
And so at what point do we sound the alarm? What is the moment in which someone presses the red button and says, this is no longer normal, this is no longer democratic electoral politics, this is an existential threat to the very basis of this country? When is that moment?
For the rights of people as me, who are coming from former colonies and who are, for example, my mother is Jewish and my father is Muslim. So I know that I will be the first enemy of the far-right extremism in France. So as a student, as a young person, I will not wait for the fascism to come. And this is important to talk about how the young people are facing racism, discrimination, stigmatization, and how our lives are impacted by far-right extremism.
I think that there is a strong response on the ground, and that the response doesn't get coverage. The thing to me is the discrepancy between what you can see in the media and what people say on the ground on social media, and how they feel with the rise of the far right. So I think that they have much attention, but it's not really in line with how they weigh really on the French minds.
Yeah, I think we need to sound the alarm. Like, people are suffering already from the rise of the far right, but I think we need to sound it critically. We need to shift focus away from the same old discourses, and we also need to offer progressive alternatives. And lots of people are working for that on the ground. You know, we just don't talk about them. We just talk about the same old people who have no answer to the issues we're facing, whether it's the far right or the crisis that our world is facing, really.
For some, far-right parties are like any other. But to me, it feels like they're degrading the fabric of our society and changing the core of our democracy. But perhaps worst of all is the fear they create in the lives of ordinary people and the political cowardice of those who fail to challenge their narrative with a robust defense of an inclusive society.
Voilà, on a eu... Comment certaines institutions traitent les minorités. Nous, on a peur d'eux, mais parce que, justement, notre corps est en danger.
The French government is now openly taking ownership of their political agenda.
Je suis journaliste,
which is basically to seek and destroy any form of political criticism of systemic racism.